Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we're reading from Canto 6, Chapter 18, verse 23 to 30. So this is actually quite a number of verses, and there is so much nectar in them, almost too much to discuss all in one class. Yes, yes, yes. Sometimes the topics are a little hidden, you know? But what I would like to do, I would really like to start with verse number 23 and go along and then comment on some verses a little bit. And then the 30th with the Sanskrit we will keep for the very end, and it probably will be pretty much, yeah, second half somewhere there of the whole class. Okay, so verse number 23, I will just read the translation to save a little bit of time. Sri Sukadev Goswami said, just to help Indra, Lord Vishnu killed the two brothers Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu. Because of their being killed, their mother, Diti, overwhelmed with lamentation and anger, contemplated as follows. Verse number 24. Lord Indra, who is very much fond of sense gratification, has killed the two brothers Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu by means of Lord Vishnu. Therefore, Indra is cruel, hard-hearted, and sinful. When will I, having killed them, rest with a pacified mind? So now, next verse, 25. When dead, the bodies of all the rulers known as kings and great leaders will be transformed into worms, stool, or ashes. If one enviously kills others for the protection of such a body, does he actually know the true interest of life? Certainly he does not. For if one is envious of other entities, he surely goes to hell. And there is a little purport there. The material body, even if possessed by a great king, is ultimately transformed into stool, worms, or ashes. When one is so attached to the bodily conception of life, he is certainly not very intelligent. So here I just want to mention a few little things, since two times in the verse this topic of envy comes. And this is actually in itself a whole deep topic which is well worthwhile more deeply understanding. There is in 5.18.9, there is a funny little thing Prabhupada puts into the word-for-word translation. It says there, kalaha, meaning the envious, and then in brackets Prabhupada puts almost everyone. So, you know, this is actually the situation. We might be thinking, yes, Lord Indra is envious. Oh, yeah, of course, Diti is envious. She wants revenge. But Prabhupada very, very nicely, he says, almost everyone. So, I mean, almost everyone, we have to assume that this actually includes us also, you know, that we are not one of those very few there who are not included in this almost everyone. this is really the point, that this envy is the most subtle form of actually sex desire, we can say. And it is the most subtle way how this bodily concept manifests, right? Because bodily concept is their gross bodily concept, but then also subtle bodily concept, identifying with a mind, intelligence, false ego, most subtle element of the subtle body, so subtle that we miss it all the time, we identify with it, you know, and this is how this envy comes about, that we want to be the supreme enjoyer. We use every opportunity to establish our supremacy. And very often these things are very subtle, we don't even realize. And I want to share one little nice verse, which I quite often discuss with devotees, because it is very simple, but yet so profound, where the verse discusses the envious and non-envious behavior towards seniors equals juniors. And Prabhupada very nicely explains this. So I have copied most of it on my verse book there, but not the complete thing. This, if you want to write it down, this is Canto 4, Chapter 8, Verse 34. And it sounds very simple, but yet, once we turn the whole topic more deeply, we realize, wow, it is actually so profound. So the verse goes, every man should act like this. When he meets a person more qualified than himself, he should be very pleased. When he meets someone less qualified than himself, he should be compassionate towards him. And when he meets someone equal to himself, he should make friendship with him. In this way, one is never affected by the threefold miseries of this material world. Wow. You know, if we just learn how to act towards seniors, equals, and juniors, we are never affected by the miseries of this material world. Wow, that's amazing. That's striking, isn't it? Yes. So now listen to this. In the purport, Prabhupada mentions it two more times. Yes. And as I said, I copied only the main key sentences from the purport. Generally, now Prabhupada, that was the non-envious behavior, so now Prabhupada explains the envious behavior. And he starts very generally, you know, he says, generally, when we find someone more qualified than ourselves, we become envious of him. When we find someone less qualified, we deride him. And when we find someone equal to ourselves, we become very proud of our activities. And again, Prabhupada says, these are the causes of all material tribulations. Again, you know. So yes, towards seniors, the envy manifests that we are not so pleased to meet him. We ignore, we neglect, we try to diminish the person's importance. Sometimes fault-finding, backbiting, criticizing, and. And it's just a subtle way of establishing, yes, actually I am superior. And that person is not even that good anyway. You know? And then towards juniors, Prabhupada says, we deride, we press down, we push down, we want to keep him down. We don't want to make him more successful than I am. You know, sometimes overly heavily chastising, you know, and it's a whole discussion which we don't have time now. So, and then towards equals, we are proud of our activities. We like to chant our glories, just to impress the person. Actually, I am a little superior to you after all, you know, because I'm doing this and that and the other thing. And by the way, what are you doing? You also doing something? You know, so these are all the subtle ways how envy manifests. So even towards juniors, envy, if the mentality and consciousness is envious, it comes out in all relationships, not only towards a person who has something which we don't have. No, it's a certain type of consciousness which comes out in all relationships. And then at the very end of that purport, Prabhupada continues describing how one should act, and then he says again, these important functions will make one happy within this material world. Three times this is stated, that really this envy is the root of all miseries. And if we just learn to give up this envy, then we can actually be happy in this material world. Prabhupada says it, you know? Yes, yes. And also Prabhupada says in one purport also something striking, that he says, that's 5.13.18, he says, one person is envious of another, and this is the way of the material world. The Krishna consciousness movement aims at creating an atmosphere of non-envy. Of course, it is not possible for everyone to become Krishna conscious, but the Krishna consciousness movement can create an exemplary society wherein there is no envy. Wow. Nice little vision, you know, of ISKCON to actually create a society wherein there is no envy, and then it is really Vaikuntha atmosphere. Because in the spiritual world there is no envy. But of course we still have a bit to go until we get there. That is not such a cheap thing to achieve. So of course so much more could be said, but I will move on now to verse number 26. Diti thought, Indra considered and restrained. I therefore wish to have a son who can remove Indra's madness. Let me adopt some means to help me in this. Short purport. One who is in the bodily conception of life is compared in the Shastras to animals like cows and asses. Diti wanted to punish Indra, who had become like a lower animal. I mean, here it's just interesting to see where Diti is so full of revenge, and she kind of, you know, she points the finger at Indra and says, yeah, he is on the bodily conception of life. But if she laments about the death of her two sons, she is actually also on the bodily conception of life. And this is again actually an effect of envy, that we point the finger at others and we think, oh yeah, you know, it's all their shortcomings and fault. That's again actually envy. She thinks he's envious, you know, but actually it seems like she also has a bit of envy there in her heart. And in some previous purport, or in the summary, I think, Prabhupada actually said, yes, Diti was envious, you know, and that's why this whole conflict there is coming about. But as we know, it is ending on a good note. So now let me read the next one. Verse number 27-28. Thinking in this way, in brackets, with a desire for a son to kill Indra, Diti began constantly acting to satisfy Kasyapa by her pleasing behavior. O king, Diti always carried out Kasyapa's orders very faithfully, as he desired, with service, love, humility, and control, with words spoken very sweetly to satisfy her husband and with smiles and glances at him, Diti attracted his mind and brought it under. There's a little purport. When a woman wants to endear herself to her husband and make him very faithful, she must try to please him in all respects. When the husband is pleased with his wife, the wife can receive all necessities, ornaments, and full satisfaction for her senses. Herein, this is indicated by the behavior of Diti. So, of course, this is a very interesting topic. Yes. This is actually a very important principle to deeply understand, because as we know, the same principle is going on the absolute platform in the spiritual world between Krishna and Radharani. Right? Radharani is most expert in sacrificing anything and everything to please Krishna. And she conquers Krishna's heart. She becomes the controller of the supreme controller. Wow, amazing. You know? That's the power of selfless service. Yes, very powerful. So, and the same principle is also there on Krishna, on the level of Krishna and his devotees. Right? Krishna becomes conquered by the selfless service mood of his devotees. Yes, he becomes indebted. There is, let me see, I picked out all these nice verses. Where do I have it? There is a nice verse where this principle is exactly described. This is 9th canto, 4th chapter, verse number 66. It says there, as chaste women bring their gentle husbands under control by service, the pure devotees who are equal to everyone and completely attached to me in the core of their heart, bring me under their full control. Right? So, same thing is there between Krishna and his devotees. And in a somewhat perverted reflection, the same thing is there between man and woman, between husband and wife. Yes, same thing. So that's how we ladies can, you know, bring our husbands under our control, not by telling him what to do and what not to do, but by simply serving. Serving, serving, serving. That conquers the husband's heart. And then, as Prabhupada explains, then the husband will supply everything. Ornaments, decorations, whatever. But we ladies often don't want to pay this price, you know, of selfless service. And we start demanding and harassing our poor husbands, and then he's not going to want to provide and supply, you see. Yeah, so these deep secrets are almost lost and forgotten these days, you know. Of course, I also have to say sometimes the men don't, they also have lost and forgotten the art of providing for a woman. Sometimes they come to me and they say, oh, you know, this emotional care of a wife, what do? You know, and I tell them, well, you buy a little gift, and you know, oh, gift? What? What for example? You know, yes, and then I have to tell them, or something for their hair, a little hair toy, or some nice scarf, or you know, something beautiful and pretty, you know, and oh, okay, you know, so yes, so this. This is a little lost and forgotten, all these secrets there. But I can say one thing. If we women learn that tactic to serve, and this is not only in regards to husband and wife, it actually happens in all levels of our interaction. If we have that mood of pleasing a man, then we will receive, because it's built into the male nature. Actually, he wants to, you know, reciprocate and protect and provide. He actually wants to do that. So, and if we serve, then we just strike that chord in his heart, and he will be inspired to do actually what he is meant to do. And there is one purport, my God, where Prabhupada speaks so heavily, I don't even dare to read the whole thing. Otherwise I might be labeled as being too controversial or something. So, but this is 9.3.10. This is this purport with Chavanamuni and Sukanya, where Prabhupada speaks so heavily about exactly this principle. You know, where Prabhupada says, I just would pick out a few sentences of the purport because we are also running out of time gradually. So Prabhupada starts with the purport. No, actually he doesn't start, there is something else before. But he says, if any wife wants to be happy with her husband, she must try to understand her husband's temperament and please him. This is victory for a woman. However great a woman may be, she must place herself before her husband in this way, as maidservant. That is to say, she must be ready to carry out her husband's orders and please him in all circumstances. Then her life will be successful. When the wife becomes as irritable as the husband, their life at home is sure to be disturbed or ultimately completely broken. Now, Prabhupada says, in the modern day, Prabhupada knows exactly what's going on. In the modern day, the wife is never submissive. Wow, you know, Prabhupada really slams the fist on the table here. And as a woman, I can read this. I'm sure not many class givers in a male body would dare to read these things and would be taken as anti-woman preaching. But I'm so bold, I will read it, because it's Prabhupada, you know? I mean, I do have firm faith in Prabhupada's words. This is the law books for the next 10,000 years. Prabhupada puts it all in the Bhagavatam, you know? We just have to more deeply understand and accept. So, hang on, where was it? In the modern day, the wife is never submissive, and therefore, home life is broken even by slight incidents. Either the wife or the husband may take advantage of the divorce laws. According to the Vedic law, however, there is no such thing as divorce laws, and a woman must be trained to be submissive to the will of her husband. Westerners contend that this is a slave mentality for the wife. But factually, it is not. And now the crunch comes. It is the tactic. It's just the tactic. Nothing more than that. It's the tactic by which a woman can conquer the heart of her husband, however irritable or cruel he may be. Wow. However irritable and cruel. See, this is the power of the feminine energy, actually. We will come to that in a minute, the next verse. Feminine energy, so powerful that she can conquer the heart of her husband, even if he's cruel. That's what Prabhupada says. Yes. Yeah, for some, it might not be so easily understandable, but, well, Prabhupada put it in there. And he's not just talking about Chavanamuni and Sukanya, but he's saying it in general terms. So we somehow have to learn to understand the deeper secrets around this and the tactic. Prabhupada says it's just the tactic. That's all. You see? Yes. By the way, that's why we sometimes hear in Grihastha seminars, we hear this advice. For the first 10 years, the wife should just say, yes, Prabhu, yes, Prabhu, yes, Pati, yes, Pati. And then for the rest of their lives, he will say, yes, Devi, yes, Devi. But it might take 10 years or maybe even 20 or a whole lifetime, depending on how expert we are, to learn this tactic. Right? Yes. Yes, it's worthwhile keeping it in the back of your mind for the ladies who are just about to get married or are married or whatever. Okay, so let me move on to verse number 29. Although Kasyapa Muni was a learned scholar, he was captivated by Diti's artificial behavior, which brought him under her control. Therefore, he assured his wife that he would fulfill her desires. Such a promise by a husband is not at all astonishing. Not at all. Because it's the natural way how things are built, you know. The husband is responding to that service by wanting to fulfill her desires. It's built into the man's nature that he wants to fulfill and protect and provide. So, not at all astonishing. But of course, here Diti's behavior is a little artificial. She is cunning. She is calculating. You know, okay, if I just serve him nicely, then he will do whatever I want, and then I will ask him for what I want. So it's not all selfless devotion here, but she is simply using that tactic to get what she wants. You know, she is clever. So then next verse, verse number 30. So now we chant the Sanskrit. Oh God, I really need new glasses. Vilokshay kanta putani, putanyado pajapati, striyam chakre svade haram, yaya pungsa matirita. Somebody wants to chant. One of the ladies would like to chant. Thank you. Translation. In the beginning of creation, Lord Brahma, the father of the living entities of the universe, saw that all the living entities were unattached. To increase population, he then created woman from the better half of a man's body, for woman's behavior carries away a man's mind. Another juicy verse. Purport. This entire universe is going on under the spell of sexual attachment, which was created by Lord Brahma to increase the population of the entire universe, not only in human society, but also in other species. As stated by Rishabhdev in the fifth canto, Pumsa Striya Mituni Bhavam Itam, the entire world is going on under the spell of sexual attraction, and desire between man and woman. When man and woman unite, the hard knot of this attraction becomes increasingly tight, and thus a man is implicated in the materialistic way of life. This is the illusion of the material world. This illusion acted upon Kasyapa Muni, although he was very learned and advanced in spiritual knowledge. As stated in Manu Samhita 2.215 and Srimad Bhagavatam 9.19.17, Matrasva sra duhitrava navivita sano bhavet balavan indriya gramo vidvam sam ampi kashati. A man should not associate with a woman in a solitary place, not even with his mother, sister, or daughter, for the senses are so strong that they lead astray even a person advanced in knowledge. When a man remains in a solitary place with a woman, his sexual desires undoubtedly increase. Therefore, the words ekanta bhutani, which are used here, indicate that to avoid sexual desires, one should avoid the company of women as far as possible. Sexual desire is so powerful that one is saturated with it if he stays in a solitary place with any woman, even his mother, sister, or daughter. Ooh, so heavy and strong words. So, yes, interesting to understand, you know, Lord Brahma first created men and then, well, he realized, oh, they're all unattached. So, okay, let's create woman from his better half of his body. This is almost like Christianity, you know, Adam and Eve. Eve was created from Adam's ribs here. So, well, we can say, you know, actually, we women, we do bring color and beauty into life. Wouldn't life be boring if all human beings had a male nature? It would be pretty square and gray and boring. So that's why, you know, Lord Brahma created the female form, and we have heard it so many times, women are Maya. Well, of course, they are not Maya. They are living entities like every other living entity. But Krishna has given that female form a very powerful energy. Very, very powerful. You know? And that makes the whole world go around and around. Otherwise, the whole game will not go on here. And I like to compare the man's body and the female body with certain vehicles. The male body I like to compare to a, and I hope you will not be offended, but I like to compare to a tractor. You know, very simple, functional, basic, getting things done, you know, pulling three trailers behind you, you know, being there in the front, taking charge, moving mountains. Somebody has to play that function. So that's what the male vehicle is like. It's the tractor. So now female vehicle, I like to compare to a sports car. You know, very powerful in energy, bit flashy, fancy, few little extras. And isn't it most men love to have a sports car, right? Yes, let's be honest, you know. So these are the vehicles, and Krishna just arranged them perfectly so they are meant to play different functions. And feminine energy, so powerful. The Bhagavatam is full of stories where some great saintly person is falling down just by the tinkling of some ankle bells. And mind you, it's not just the tinkling. If we take some ankle bells and tinkle, I don't think that's going to make a man fall down. But the tinkling travels on the feminine energy. And that's what the man might make him fall down. That's what bewilders and carries away his mind. It's not the tinkling, but the energy. Or there's the example, Devahuti as a young girl playing ball on the rooftop of the palace, and Vishvavasu flying past. He doesn't only fall down, but he literally falls out of his aeroplane. So I don't think we ever hear the stories the other way around, right? That a man dressed in a gumshoe plays basketball, you know, and a woman loses her mind or something, you know, unless it's Krishna himself or something. No. So it just shows male energy is just not as powerful as the feminine energy. And that's what how Brahma, on Krishna's behalf, he set it all up like that. So now, we women, we have the choice. It depends how we use this energy. You see, we can follow in the footsteps of Lakshmi Devi and become the auspicious source of energy in a man's life, in marriage, through chastity, through shyness. Prabhupada says shyness is the control valve to keep that feminine energy within and use it on higher levels. Well, it's all in the Bhagavatam. By the way, if you want to discover more about this throughout the January, we will be having different courses, and there we discuss it all in details. Yes. So we can either through shyness keep that powerful energy within and use it on higher levels and become actually a little Lakshmi Devi there in the within the family. Or Prabhupada says when the control valve is loosened, women create havoc. Then the whole energy bursts out into the world and bewilders everybody. And then we are following in the footsteps of Durga Devi. So basically, it's up to us. That's why we have to learn how to drive the sports car, you know, and not have all kinds of unwanted accidents there. So in any case, time is running out. One funny thing I remember. Once Bhaktivaibhava Swami was visiting Ukraine, and I was there, he was giving a class. And it was all about respecting women as mothers. And one brahmachari was asking, what does it actually mean? How do we respect a woman as mothers? And Maharaj said, you better respect them. Women are very powerful. They can finish you off. That's what he said. I think, Prabhu, you were there. Didn't you even ask the question? I think you were. No? Okay. Yes. But that was Maharaj's answer. You better respect them. Women are very powerful. They can finish you off. So you better respect them. Good warning to the men. Yes. So in any case, you know, the purport is full of strong words that one should not even associate in a solitary place with his sister, mother, sister or daughter or mother. Very strong words, very strong. So this is the thing, actually. Vaishnav etiquette and Vaishnav culture is meant to, it's Krishna's system to bring stability and harmony into this world so we can wholeheartedly develop our relationship with Krishna. But our problem today is that we think our system is better than Krishna's system. This is what we think, you know? We think Krishna's system is old-fashioned and outdated and not in anymore. And we think we know better and we invent our system. And This is exactly why we are facing so many social disturbances. Inside is gone, outside is gone. All the social disturbances, divorce, child abuse, violence towards women, they're all global reactions for not following Krishna's system. Because in Krishna's system, they have no place. They have no place. Yes. Yes. As Prabhupada was always saying, every material problem has a spiritual solution. It is all there. Krishna has given us a perfect system. So let's just imagine how powerful the lockdown movement will become once we actually learn to understand Krishna's system and apply it. It will take a few generations, but then we can really show the world how civilized and cultured human life is meant to be led. Because people out there are fried, they are frustrated, they're looking for alternatives, but they don't know Krishna's system. But we have access to it. And then really Lord Chaitanya Sankirtan movement will take off if we can show the world, you know, how human life is meant to be lived in peace and harmony and stability. And in the Bhagavatam, it's all in there. Prabhupada put it all in there. All we have to do is to deeply understand it and accept it and try and apply it in our life. So on this note, I will finish. Thank you kindly. Are there any questions? I mean, those of you who have to go, please, there is any questions. Yes, Madhuji. Is there, can somebody bring her the microphone, please, quickly?
Thank you for your lecture and your important points. I have some lady friends, and they try to be submissive to their husbands, but the husbands don't, they are actually using their submissiveness. They don't want to take up responsibility. They even expect their wives to supply the family, for the family to go and work and get the money. And how should a woman, or how to deal with such situations where the men actually use the submissiveness of the wives?
Yes.
Such ways.
Actually, see, this is why I give these courses also for the men, because they also do need to understand Krishna's system very, very clear, you know. The feminine energy, very powerful, and in many cases, if we women do the right thing, then the men respond properly, but sometimes not, very true, especially when men come from families, you know, with bad, where they have bad experiences, you know, certain samskaras, you know, and then you just pass it on to in your own family life. So that's why I'm saying it will take several generations to get it right, you see. But, I mean, see, I always explain the principle of hierarchy. Hierarchy comes from Greek language, and it actually means divine order. So hierarchy is Krishna's system for protection. Brahmanas are meant to protect the Kshatriyas, are meant to protect the Vaishyas, are meant to protect the Sudras. Man is meant to protect woman. So, but when, and of course on the top of the hierarchy is Krishna. But if Krishna is removed, then the whole hierarchy becomes a system for exploitation. And that's what's been going on. Brahmanas exploiting the Kshatriyas, exploiting the Vaishyas, exploiting the Sudras. Men exploiting the women. Yes, definitely. It's been going on and it's still going on. Yes. So, but nevertheless, good to understand that the solution to it is not equality or independence or something, but to put Krishna back on the top. That's the solution. So the men simply have to be Krishna conscious. They have to understand that they're servant and not the supreme controller and master. Right? Yes. And another thing is, if the men deeply understand how the women are meant to be the Lakshmi Devis, Prabhupada says, the women are meant to be the auspicious source of energy and inspiration. So once the men deeply understand this, oh well, then hopefully it becomes very clear that they have to take care of their auspicious source of energy and inspiration, otherwise they're not going to have it. Right? Yes. But see, this is all not clear. It's not, you know, we have not given this education that people understand. And that's why I'm, you know, trying to impress this on the men, that the women are your Lakshmi Devis, so you better take care of her. You know, yes, yes, yes. You better learn to provide and take care and protect. Otherwise, you're just not going to have a Lakshmi Devi there in your life. You know? Yes, Mataji. Lakshmi Rani Mataji.
Hare Krishna. I was here in Mayapur, 1974, or 574. And we were in Prabhupada's room, and this kind of discussion was going on. Prabhupada was explaining how in Vedic society we can always tell someone's position by how they dress. Mm. And so he gave a whole list of the different dress signals that people had. And then he said at the end, but in our Hare Krishna movement, everyone dresses simply. So one, Mataji, one God sister of mine, she said, Srila Prabhupada, if your husband buys you beautiful saris, can't you wear them? And so Prabhupada said, yes, you can wear them when your husband is there. Otherwise, who are you trying to attract? He said, Krishna is not attracted by beautiful saris. But then he said, they should think of you as mother. Other men should think of you as mother. So she made a face. She kind of rolled her eyes in her head, and Prabhupada saw it. And so he said, he kind of asked her why she did that. And she responded, they call us mother, but they don't treat us like mother. So then someone sitting next to Srila Prabhupada, a sannyasi, said to Srila Prabhupada, I think that they think, you know that prayer, Prabhupada, where the devotee says, whenever I think of sex life, I spit on the idea. And so then Prabhupada was silent for a few seconds, and then he said, first, let them become free of sex desire, then let them spit. So, you know, the ideal situation laid out in philosophical terms is perfect in every way. But the reality is, in many cases, that both the men and the women are conditioned by the three modes of material nature. And because that conditioning is there, and the influence especially of passion and ignorance, then it's very difficult for people to act. Even when one person acts ideally, or as close to ideally as one can get, and you have the other situation where the modes of material nature are playing games and manipulating someone because of sex desire, because of so many things. So the ultimate issue, as you mentioned at the end there, is that we have to work very hard to become Krishna conscious. Because unless we bring our senses under control, we don't want Lakshmis and we don't want, you know, tractors and what sports cars. We want devotees who are going to help each other go back to Godhead. And so the motivation behind our working together in Krishna consciousness is to help each other become Krishna conscious. When I get dressed in the morning, I don't think how I can attract somebody else. I think, how can I help my society so that everybody goes back to Godhead, both the men and the women. Hare Krishna.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
just a two anecdotes of speaking to what you were talking about and what Lakshmimani Mataji was talking about. A god sister told me that this is many years ago. She was in an elevator with a sannyasi, and he literally spat at her. It's very sad, but that happened. But what I wanted to relate to was a something that happened in the very early pioneer days in Mayapur. And I was a Brahmacharini here for many years before my marriage. And Mayapur in those days, we were very, very, very poor. We didn't often have enough to even eat. There were only maybe four Western women here and a handful of Western men, and then, you know, maybe 30 Bengali devotees. So we would eat at the old big kitchen, and the system was that the men would be served first, and then whatever was left in the buckets would go to the women. So over a period of about 6 to 7 weeks, we were actually starving, because whatever was left in the buckets was so minuscule that we really were barely keeping body and soul together. So after about 6 weeks of this, I'd had enough. This wasn't viable. So I went to the temple commander. I won't mention names. Some of you may know him. So I went to the temple commander and said, look, this, you know, the women are starving. You have to give us more to eat. And in those days, the co-director at the time was then Bhavananda Maharaj. And he would sit outside. The Brahmacharinis would live in little cells kind of thing, tiny little rooms above the old big kitchen. And the co-director would sit on a little seat outside, and then after prasadam, anyone who had some problems or issues could go and, you know, meet with him there. And unbeknownst to them, my room was up the very top, so I could actually hear. If I wanted to, I could hear what they were talking. So after I'd spoken to the temple commander about the fact that the women were starving to death, I could hear him speaking to the co-director, saying, oh, KR, my name's Krishna Rupa, and my nickname then was KR. And, oh, KR, she came to me and she's complaining all the women are starving. And he was hoping that he would get me into trouble because I was complaining. And so he's just waiting for the co-director then to say, oh, yeah, you know, she's too much, et cetera, et cetera. But much to his surprise, the co-director yelled at him and said, don't you understand? If the women in society are unhappy, or if the women are unhappy, the whole of the society will be ruined. So the very next day, Jayapataka Maharaj himself, he wasn't the person that had said that, but Jayapataka Maharaj himself, first of all, he came and he served all the women by his own hand first. And then he gave the rest of the buckets, what was left in the buckets, to the men. The day after that, the women had their buckets of prasadam, the men had their buckets of prasadam, and they were equally distributed. I just thought I might like to share that.
Yeah, I mean, in Manu Samhita, there is a verse where women are not respected, no sacrifice yields results. Yes. You know, so there is a lot of training and education to be given in order to get things right. And I think it is very much to be expected that in the early days, things were applied in a very immature and abusive way, simply because the devotees were so neophyte. You know, it is to be expected. I see this simply as the growing pains of ISKCON. You know, because the leaders at that time, they were 3, 4, 5 years in the movement. So, of course, they were completely neophyte and they were misapplying the philosophy. And I think it has to be expected. But things are getting better, I think. Right? Yes. Okay, thank you kindly. I think we better finish. Srila Prabhupada ki, Ganta Chimad Bhagavatam ki, Samaveda Bhaktavinda ki, Guru Premanandi, Hare Krishna.